This is the 50th Anniversary History Conference of NA in Nashville, Tennessee, October 3rd through the 5th, 2003. The recordings from this conference belong to the public domain. The next speaker we have is Sally E. from 29 Palms, California. My name is Sarah and I'm an addict. And I live here in Nashville now. I was fortunate enough to be able to pick up Sally from the airport just a couple days ago, and I have really enjoyed having her here, hearing the other speakers. I've been able to go out to dinner a few times, and it's just been a great experience. So Michelle and I are going to ask some questions of Sally so that we can get this on tape, get a little more on tape than we were able to do with just the speaking. So the first question, one thing I'd like to hear about, Sally, is what were the meetings like? When I know you got clean in 1969. Is that when you started attending meetings?
Yeah, I started attending meetings in 69, and I started attending Narcotics Anonymous meetings. I had spent about a year putting together 30 days, 60 days, a week, 5 days in another 12-step program, and I never felt like I belonged there. They didn't like me very well. And my first meeting was Manhattan Beach, 11th and Mal, and it was, I knew I belonged there. There was no doubt about it in my mind. They were tough. Most of the people were heroin addicts, and they weren't very positive about your chances of recovery. They told me my chances were between slim and none. There was a guy by the name of Jack Whaley who used to, if someone was talking in the back, he'd say, "Hey, shut up." And then he'd go, you in the red shirt, shut up. And they didn't put up with a lot of bullshit. They didn't coddle, and they didn't, they just told you what you needed to do, and you were expected to do it, and that's kind of how they were. They were all heroin addicts. There weren't very many women. there was one other lady, and she had like a couple weeks less than I did, and we sponsored each other. And then I used people like Jack and Chuck and Bob Barrett and stuff to when it was really crazy. I remember one time, her name was Maureen, and I remember one time going over to her house, and I was trying to learn how to hold a job, and I was pretty paranoid about the people at work, and I came over and I laid this big paranoid trip on her, and she agreed with me. So, you know, I don't know how we did it, but we limped along, and we both stayed clean, and I think she's still clean today. I think she moved up north a few years ago, but she's still clean, and she went through a lot of stuff, the death of a husband, and a loss of a child, and she stayed clean. And she was a product of those early meetings, too. And then when I started attending the La Mirada meeting that Mel started, Mel was always there, and a lot of the other people were always there, a lot of the early people. And that meeting over time, you know, there are meetings that are toxic. Well, that meeting over time became toxic. And a lot of those folks would sit in the same chair every, and Mel talked about the canned pitch. Like we could say, I would go, she can talk about blah, blah, blah. And we knew exactly what all of these folks were going to say. And God forbid a newcomer could come in and sit in one of those chairs. I'm serious. It was like, oh, that was just, no. And people would sit down, and I would try to tell them, no, you better sit. Why don't you come back here and sit with me? Because I knew there was going to be a bunch of shit. Well, those people got loaded. And they got loaded when I had, they got loaded at 15 years, at 17 years, at 10 years. Every one of them that sat in those same chairs, attended that same meeting year after year, month after month, and said the same stuff. And, you know, Chuck used to say that you can stay clean on meetings and nothing else, but sooner or later push is going to come to shove, and you're either going to grow or you're going to get loaded. Okay.
Right.
Does that take care of that, or?
Uh-huh. All right. I got my next question. I got a question.
Yeah.
Can we use the microphone?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to stand down and have it. All right. My question is, being a literature buff, what is your favorite step, tradition, and concept, and why?
Oh, boy. Oh,
<wait. laughs> Okay. I didn't think about that. I've been thinking about that for quite a long time.
My favorite step is the third step, and because that's the surrender step, and that's the step that I do on a daily basis. I don't always write on a daily basis. I don't always do a lot of the other steps on a daily basis, but that's the step that I do on a daily basis. And that's the step that keeps me grounded. That's the step that keeps me serene. Whatever serenity I might have that day, depending on how what it's really good or bad. But that's probably the most important spot for me. I mean, they're all important. One's not more important than the other one, but that's the step I use the most.
Right.
Probably anonymity. Probably anonymity. And why? Because it's so important. That stuff helps me not put myself out there a lot. That stuff helps me stay grounded in the fact that I'm a part of. And that, you know, they talk about rape. Like in San Diego, I felt so embarrassed when everybody came up to me afterwards because they felt like I didn't do that. The program did that. And I just felt uncomfortable with it. A friend of mine tells me that I don't like any kind of big fuss because I don't like, and that's probably why I don't like to speak a lot. And that's probably why I didn't want to be, I didn't want some of the service positions that I had. It just, my friend Chuck said that everything that happened to him happened because he was clean and because he was available. And I think that's what everything that happened because of God, because of a higher power, because I was clean. And I was trying to stay connected with a higher power. And when I get too much personal attention, it's so uncomfortable for me. I don't like that.
I can relate to that.
I can relate to that totally. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
You know, when I got married, you know, everybody was talking. My husband and I had lived together for a while, and we were buying this house, and we had to write a letter to the mortgage. I didn't want to get married that bad. And we had to write a letter to the mortgage company about what the nature of our relationship. And that felt so uncomfortable for both of us that we decided to get married. And people were all excited, you know, we're going to do this and you're going to do that. And I'm just getting more and more nervous about it. And finally, my husband asked, well, what do you want? And I said, I just want to get married. So we just went and we got married. And everybody's kind of disappointed, but that's, I had the wedding that I wanted.
Did you party afterward for your friends? We went off and got married.
Yeah, I just wanted, I didn't want a lot of stuff.
I don't like the attention being on me either.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and you talked about your anxiety when you were getting clean, I'm sure, and when you were first clean.
Yeah.
I also related a lot to that. Valium was the last thing I put down for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And once I quit doing everything, you know, first thing I did, what, I quit doing everything, went to the doctor and said, I think I need some Valium. And he said, of course you do. And so for one more week going to meetings, which was AA for me at the time also, for that first week going to meetings, I had my Valium, and then fortunately I realized that I wasn't going to get what they had using anything, and I put it down and just sat on my hands for the next little while because of the anxiety. But tell us a little more
about
that. You mentioned that you'd gone crazy before you got clean. That's why you knew that you could probably stay clean, and even though you felt like...
About the anxiety, I wasn't going to go crazy.
You knew you could get through it, because that wasn't it.
Right, that isn't it. Let me know. Let me tell you, I know what's it. And when you start feeling things that aren't there, and you start seeing things that aren't there, that's crazy.
Okay, shall we get to... okay. I've had some questions here. We're winging it. Okay, well, you mentioned, for one, the convention that ended up that Southern California was really wanting it, Northern California was really wanting it. Which convention was that? That wasn't the very first convention.
Oh, no, that was way, way up the line. It was the first time that...
They took bids?
The convention... Oh, no, they kept on taking bids. But it was the first time the convention, the World Convention, went out of California.
What year was that?
Between 5 and 10, maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, it was maybe, something like that. Maybe, I don't know, 75, maybe.
Because this was the 30th this year in 2003.
Yeah.
So 73, I guess, was the first, or 74, I haven't
71 was the first. It was probably 75.
Oh, yeah, because they skipped a few
75, years. 76, maybe something like that. They always went to either Northern California or Southern California.
Where most of the addicts happened to live.
Yeah,
most of the meetings were.
Yeah.
Addicts were everywhere. The meetings happened to be in California.
Yeah. That's right.
And
you're Terry? I'm an addict. My name is Terry. And you said that you don't like attention, a lot of attention, but... You know, and I'm assuming that's good attention, people telling you what a good job that you've done. What about, Lynn mentioned the time when you were, your character was assassinated. How about that kind of attention?
No, I didn't like that.
But, you know, I do better.
Yeah.
When people are being mean to me, I can sort of fight back. When they're being nice to me, so I want to know.
Yeah, okay, I can talk about that.
Yeah, talk about that whole thing. That was at the World Service Conference.
Yeah, in 1983, it was about the book, and it was over the changes that the trustees had authorized. And Chuck Gates probably stood up he gave the WSO report, and then he stood there for probably 2 hours and was personally attacked.
Okay, let me clarify. I'm not sure here.
Right.
In 83 was when the book had just been published.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's why we ended up with the second edition so quickly.
The 84 was the second edition, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
So I came in 84.
Right.
The second edition.
Yes.
Okay.
You want me? I'll try and do the best job I can. I explained it to somebody a few days ago. They asked me about that. And I finished, and they looked at me and said, this is too esoteric for me.
Try it.
Okay. It's so convoluted and so... But what happened was... when the book was turned over to the World Service Office in Jimmy in 1982 to be published, Jimmy caught errors in Tradition 4 and Tradition 9. And those errors placed the service structure outside of Narcotics Anonymous. Said Narcotics Anonymous clears the meeting, and anything else is not Narcotics Anonymous. So if everything else is not Narcotics Anonymous, the service boards and committees are not responsible to abide by the tradition, are not required to. At least that's the way Jimmy read it. Jimmy was a big tradition person, and he fought that. And I've always felt very bad about that, because in Ohio, the literature committee gave the tradition to me to take to California and to have the trustees work on those traditions between the Ohio Literature Conference and the Florida Literature Conference, which was about 6 weeks. And we all had jobs. And we would get off at 5 o'clock and we would go over to Chuck's house, you know, fight traffic, it was a long distance, we'd get there around 7, his wife would feed us, and we worked till about 11, and then I'd go to work the next day. And I remember during that time period, I was exhausted. I fell, they had this in-service at work and I fell asleep. I mean, it was a half day in-service, I'm sitting between in a couple of years to be husband, and or a very short time to be husband, and my friend, and they were both trying to keep me awake, because, you know, this was not a good thing to do. they brought this psychiatrist in to give us an in-service, and I'm sleeping, you know, but that's, I was just exhausted, and I think everybody, all the rest of them are too, because we were not devoting full time to this, we had other obligations besides. So we missed that. We didn't catch it. And Greg wrote the tradition section of it. And I think it was more of an explanation that got edited out someplace. So that explanation that would have required a major rewrite was not there. So it just said that they're not narcotics anonymous. So they have this meeting. Jimmy called this meeting, and the WSBU chair was there, Chuck Gates was there, and Chuck Skinner was there, the trustee chair. And they signed an authorization to remove that material, to remove the offending material so Jimmy could publish the book. Then later on, very shortly after that, I think, Chuck told me that the WSD chair signed it, but later he disowned it. He said he just signed that he was there. His signature on it was only that he was physically present. So that left Chuck Skinner and Chuck Gates holding back. And Chuck Skinner decided he would resign. He called me up and told me there's going to be a firestorm about this. And I'm going to resign from the trustees, and I can preserve the integrity of it. He was going to make this sacrifice. I'm going to preserve the integrity of the trustees, and we can get this taken care of. And naive me, I didn't think it was going to be a problem, because they gave it to the trustees anyway, and I thought that we could do that.
Because you agreed that the change should have been made, right?
Right, I agreed, and I didn't think that it would be a problem. I just didn't think that it would be a problem. Well, Chuck had a better understanding of stuff than I did. Then Jimmy took the $25,000 that they raised by pre-selling the Red Book. You know, that's the... Yeah, that's how we raised money. We didn't have any money. That's how we raised money to print the book. So he took it to this printer, and the printer got loaded, and we went over there to talk to this printer because it wasn't coming out. And the printer was drooling, and there was cats all over and cat pee everywhere, and I mean, it was just awful. So he had taken the money in. Huge. Well, now the whole problem is back again. So this time, the entire board of trustees has made the decision. And they did. And they did knowing that there was going to be a rash of shit about it.
And your position was at that point,
Well, my term was up right before WSB. And so I never wanted to be chair. I like to be vice chair. Because I did a lot of writing, and I wrote a lot of the reports, and I liked that. I didn't want to be chair. So there was another person that nobody was willing to take the chair. And it wasn't so much because of the shit. It's like, I just didn't want it. And Chuck Skinner and Bob Barrett came to my house. And they told me I had to. And they told me why I had to. And I was like, no, I don't want to. And my husband looked at me and he said, oh, you have to. So I wrote the trustee report. I went into WSB. And Bob, I knew I couldn't explain it because, you know, I didn't have inhalers for the asthma then. I didn't have the diagnosis. And when I got upset, things, I just tended to close up. Mm-hmm. And so I gave that report. My voice shook the whole time. I was like, and then the attack came, you know. You think you believe in this tradition? Who the hell do you think you are? What? Who made you president of Narcotics Anonymous? On and on and on. And I wanted to be able to fight that, but I didn't have the physical ability to do it because I couldn't get the words out because my bronchial clamped up. So, and I was kind of irritated that the chair of the WSC was enjoying this a lot, and he didn't stop it. But, you know, that he was mad about it too, so, mm-hmm. you know, that's just how it happened. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, soaking wet. And the people really felt sorry for me, so they came up, even though they were on the other side, they came up and said, it's okay, Sally. Yeah. I didn't cry, and I got through it. And I addressed the stuff as best I could, and that was the just that conference. Mm-hmm. But it was not an easy conference. Then I thought when we went into that conference, I really believed that they were just going to fire us. A whole lot of us. And I was okay with that. I was very comfortable. Okay, have on, do it. I mean, I was really okay with that. Well, they didn't do it. I mean, go figure. I mean, I was still scratching my head about that one, but they didn't fire it. They put the stuff back in the book. And that's why we have the second edition. So the first edition had it out. The second edition had it in. And then the next year, that was the year I wanted to be trustee because I think I had a part in creating some of this shit. And I wanted to try and I just would didn't want to leave it like that. Mm-hmm. So I took the chair again, and I came back into the conference the next year. I did okay giving a trustee report. I waited for the shit. Nothing happened, and they put it back the way it was for the first edition.
So the first edition had it with it. The board not having to be accountable to the tradition.
No, the first edition had it.
Just wasn't there.
Wasn't there. The second had it, had that.
Because the board had voted to change it, basically, to where...
And they were mad.
Mm-hmm. And so the second edition had it where they were, how they had it originally, to where they weren't accountable to the guidelines.
Right.
So then the third edition said, no, we need to put it back that way because they were right.
Exactly.
They just didn't ask for permission.
Exactly.
Right.
Uh-huh. That's it.
The first book I have at home is the second edition, and I knew a third edition came out after that.
Right.
I didn't word back, so there wasn't a lot of changes.
No. It's only in 4 and 9. And it's only the part where it says,
that they are accountable to the guidelines and traditions, basically.
It says that anything else is not in A.
Yeah. And I remember that line.
Yeah. You probably went, huh? Okay, well, that for that. Mm-hmm. And there's something else I want to talk about because I don't know what happened to it, but Jenny and I and people in Lit worked on a book. And that book had some stuff was originally going to be the It Works, How and Why. Do you know about that?
Yes. Yeah. I remember seeing a draft. Was that the blue? No.
It's white. And it's like about like that.
And they, yeah, it was called something.
It Works, How and Why was what it was called.
But it was called the white draft or something.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
That draft was written by a professional author, and it was written from hundreds of tapes from addicts. It wasn't the wording that author did. He culled out stuff from hundreds of people with substantial time all over the world, all over the fellowship, all over the known fellowship. And Jenny, he was in Montana, and Jenny and I went up to Montana a few times with it. And then when he had produced the draft, a committee worked on it a little bit. And then it was presented for approval by the conference. Were you there then when that was happening?
I wasn't in the, I came to the conference 91 to 93.
Okay.
This was late 80s.
Yeah. It was presented to the conference for approval. And the RFRs voted almost across the board to approve it. And the voting non-RSRs killed it, because there was more of them than there were RSRs. So that book died. Okay. And the thing about it, I understand that it wasn't the how-to manual. It contained some of that, but mostly it contained how people with substantial time and substantial recovery work the steps and the tradition, and it had little antidotes. It was a beautiful book. Mm-hmm. It really was a beautiful book, but I've never seen it since. Mm-hmm. I have a copy, but but it's not out there, and that's always kind of bothered me. I hoped at some point, because I thought it was so good. There was a part in there when they talked about the fourth step and how it isn't something you just do and never do again, mm-hmm. and how many of us will, in our recovery, find that we need to look at maybe our finances and take a financial inventory, or maybe we have some problems in the area of sex and we need to look at that, or relationship inventory. Those are little areas that we might work at, and a lot of members have found that that in order to really progress in our recovery, we have to go back and do work in those particular areas, or this particular area, or whatever it happens to be that seems to, you know, be your sticking point for growth. And that's just one example of...
So it could be a great supplement to It Works How and Why at yes. some point.
Yes, I would.
The original one? I mean, basically it sounds like it was the original.
It was the original draft that got approved by part of the conference and then got rejected in the
yeah.
majority, and so it never came
to
approval.
Yeah, and then they created a whole new It Works How and Why that was basically a A, B, C, D,
uh-huh.
like a how-to instruction manual.
Right.
And it was written by the fellowship in that painstaking process.
Right. And they really were angry that a professional writer did it, but a professional writer didn't do it. I mean, I don't think a professional writer
he
did it.
He basically took all of our words and put it together eloquently.
Very eloquently.
And
he's a well-known published author.
So
that's something that's always kind of bothered me, that never, I think that would be invaluable for people to have, and that it just died someplace. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's in a file somewhere. But
can we bring it back?
It has to be found.
She has a copy.
I have a copy, and I'm sure the office has many copies. But
I'm sure there's a few copies out and about, too.
Yeah.
I think I've seen it from time to time. Yeah, I think, when I... I wasn't at World Service Conference in the late 80s. I was working on the OK Regional Lit Committee.
Yeah.
And so we'd get those, and then later the blue draft, which
mm-hmm.
was the final draft for It Works How and Why that got approved. So
I meant to talk about that, but I think there's so much.
Yeah.
You know, that's always bothered me a little bit, and that's always something that I, like,
just didn't feel right.
That I always hope that at some point in time, and you know, we have forever, so at some point in time it may come out again.
I have another question. Something that we don't do a whole lot of is 12-step calls.
Yes.
Did y'all do those back then, and what was it like?
Well, I 12-stepped a number of people, and nobody ever stayed clean that I 12-stepped, but I did. I remember one time I took somebody and put them on my couch, and I went to work, and I came home, and I didn't have a TV. But that was okay, you know. But, yeah, we did a lot of that, and... you know, we had our house painted last week, and we had the painters from hell, and I'm serious. I'm really serious. Well, they were just suffering addicts, Mm-hmm. And I did 12-step them. And I did get one into a recovery house. Another one, I got her to Sarah Sponsor's house for a couple of days. And the guy that had just got out of Folsom, he just kind of went, I mean, he's gone. So,
what did you say to them?
I said, well, it's pretty obvious to me you have a problem here. And then I say, you know, have you ever tried to do anything about it? Mm. And the guy with the 30 said he had 34 days before he used the second day he was in my house. So, and then he made a commitment to me that he would try to stay clean. And I gave him, I think it was my fourth year or fifth year chip, and told him just to hang on to that. And then he came back the next day and he gave it back to me because I can't do it. And I said, do you want to do it? And I got him talking about his kids and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he made a commitment that he would go into a recovery house, and he called somebody and they came and picked him up and took him to the recovery house.
Yeah. Okay.
You just say what's in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you see somebody like that, I feel really sad, and I tell them I feel sad, and that there's another way to live. But they don't have to do that.
Don't have to live that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, today we have phone lines that often just give the meeting list.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, early on, the first phone lines, it was somebody had a pager or was manning a live phone.
Yeah.
Transferring the calls into, and it wasn't just, here's where the meeting is.
No. I would go out and pick up people and take them to meetings. And then I would offer to take them the next day, or I'd come by and they'd be gone, or, you know.
But I think times have changed so much.
Times have changed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I personally would be afraid to go and pick somebody up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would be frightened with, I mean, the serial killers and something. Not that there weren't back then.
Well, I would have gone to. I might have.
Well, and
I might have.
I think it ended up being common that you don't ever do a 12-step alone.
Right,
that became
right.
The mainstay back when they were even hardly being done.
Right.
It was never do it alone.
Yeah, that was kind of a rule of thumb, but, you know, a lot of times you didn't have anybody.
Right.
So I would just go if it was a female. If it was a male, I tried to, you know, get somebody else. And I tried to sometimes feel them out, too. Sometimes you can kind of feel somebody out. And then if it was a really bad neighborhood, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Mm-hmm. What was your first spiritual awakening like? Can you remember it? And what was it like?
It was when I hit that old man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was my first spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know, and he got out and he said he was okay. And I was like, and he said, don't worry about it. We don't have to call the police. And I was like, I think there's a God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that would have been enough to put me in county for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was already on probation on the felony.
Yeah, it was a car.
Yeah.
Car to car incident.
Yeah, I had a seizure and I broadsided him.
Right.
Popped him in the hand with her fist. No, I'm kidding.
And then it was followed up right after that by that cop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, he just looked at me and he shook his head and he put his ticket back in his pocket. And I never had a cop do that to me. And he said, let's just pretend this didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, you know, and then he told me, I just blurted it all out about the felony and about being on probation and about not having a driver's license. Well, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, I mean, I didn't have any slick left. And he's just like, he's just shaking his head. And then he said, well, okay, I'm going to forget about this, but you've got to promise me that you'll start taking care of these. And I said, okay, God. And I just didn't get there fast enough. I mean, I got the one that's outlaying and then the ones that came and me off my job. I told my boss, well, you know, I just forgot to pay this traffic. He said, well, that could happen to anybody the next day. A couple days later, they're back with me, back after me.
And those tickets, too.
Yeah. And I went before that, you know, there was just so many things right in there. I went before the judge, and the judge said, I thought they were going to throw the book at me. And he said, you kind of missed your lady. I go, yeah. And he goes, well, do you have any money saved to take care of this? And I said, $200. He said, well, we're going to take your $200, and I'm going to give you a conditional license, and you can go to meetings, and you can go to work.
Wow. How wonderful.
Yeah, it was. $200 for 9 tickets?
Yeah.
Oh, please.
It's awesome.
That was
yeah.
awesome.
And so there's the God.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Any other questions?
Well, okay, the Board of Trustees.
Yes.
So what years did that end up being that you were on the Board of Trustees?
It, you know, it was funny. I was so stressed the year after, because I had such a I took such a beating the year before, and I was waiting for the next beating, and it didn't happen. And
83.
Yeah, and they asked for a list of whose term was up, and I had everybody write it down, and so I listed the people whose term was off, and I listed mine. And I had another year to run, but I was so stressed that I didn't add right, so I ended up with 9 years.
I've got a really weird question.
Yeah.
Did you have any feeling of anxiety about coming here and doing this?
Yeah, I did. Just a little bit. Not much. You know, a lot of people that we were on opposite sides of the fence with, and a lot of people that, you know, World Vet was so wonderful for me. And I really came to love a lot of the people on World Vet. And, like, I told the little story about Bone and the cockroaches and all of that. And in Ohio, and we lived, a lot of them stayed at my house during the World Service Conference, and I swept them back and forth for two World Service Conferences. And when that happened in 83, a lot of them wouldn't talk to me anymore. And I was really hurt about that. I wasn't angry. There was some anger, but it was more hurt. I was really hurt.
Yeah.
And I wondered how they were going to be with me. Bo's never been funny. Bo doesn't hold resentment. He doesn't. I really love that about him. He never, he might totally, 100% disagree with you and think you're wrong, but he will not hold it against you. So I knew I would be okay with Bo, but there were some other people. And then there's some people from the office that I thought maybe had a lot of pessimism. Oh, I know they do, to be honest. And I thought that might be a problem. But I made it a point to talk to every single, to every single person, and I've had nothing but positives with one exception.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's been 20 years.
Yeah, we've healed. We've really healed. And when I went to San Diego, I really saw that. I saw the healing that had taken place. And I forget who it was that we were just, somebody else, I don't remember who it was, but we were just awestruck by the amount of healing. And we both said that we never expected that to happen in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a real miracle, and it was just, it was just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Made for a really great celebration.
It did. It was fabulous. And you know, when I left the board, I saw, even before, I saw a movement starting to happen that I didn't like. And that was the movement toward one board. And I knew with the people that I served with and how things were, I couldn't imagine something without checks and balances. Like, you know, there were three boards, and there at least was some check and balance.
There was the Board of Trustees and the Board of the World Service Office.
Uh-huh, and then there was WSC.
Right.
And I counted that. There were three.
Right, those were the three.
Yeah.
But the two boards that merged to one board were the office and the Board of Trustees, and now it's called just the World Board?
Right.
Okay.
And the conference got smushed into that, too, didn't it?
I don't know.
I think it did, didn't it?
I think so.
I think so, too. So I was like, oh, I don't like this. You know, I was just really afraid. There were two And one was that, you know, there was no check and balance. And who's going to, like, when all that stuff was happening, everybody was checking. But, you know, I think one board then would have been really bad. Mm-hmm. And so I was worried about that. And the other thing I was worried about is, you know, there's something in another 12-step fellowship that I really dislike, and that is that they're so rigid. You know, they have the same book. Mm-hmm. And they've had the same book forever. Mm-hmm. And there's never been any updating of it or juggernaut, holy. I know what it is, but, you know, there are antiquated phraseology. I was afraid that our book, I mean, I thought that the living, breathing, growing, and I thought our literature is living, breathing, and growing, and I was afraid it would deteriorate into that kind of rigidity.
And there's still a possibility, because this is a very new system.
It's a possibility, but I didn't see that kind of, I saw them wanting to revise the stories, and I went, yes! I mean, I don't care if they do it, I don't care if they don't, but the fact that they were willing to do that,
mm-hmm.
I just thought that was awesome.
Well, I know they sent it out to the group's survey.
And they said no.
And I wasn't even sure, is that like they
yeah.
leave it alone for
yeah,
now?
Yeah, they did.
That doesn't surprise me. I just knew that survey went around and
yeah.
shelled and dig, making sure everybody, you know, got their input
yeah.
in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have any more questions? Anything else to add?
I just want to say about Jimmy that I just, yeah. that Jimmy, we're here because of Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And that Jimmy has a stubbornness and a tenacity that when NA wasn't, nothing much was happening with NA. He hung on and he hung in there, and that really worked for him, and it worked for us, and it worked to our benefit. And then later on, it didn't work as well for us. And I think a lot of times that the characteristics that, like I'm a fighter, and I'm stubborn, and that works for me, but only if I keep it in check.
Yeah.
You know how,
mm-hmm.
and everybody who was involved in that loved Jimmy,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was regretful about what happened.
How it ended up, kind of.
Yeah.
Well, because Jimmy was offered the ability to resign. He did resign, but there had been so much contention over the publication of the book and different things.
Another book. There was a lot of contention with the office over that.
So, and so that was in 82 or 83?
Uh-huh. That he resigned? Yes.
And then, and he died in 85? Someone said 85, and I really couldn't remember.
I think it was a little later than
that. A little
more,
86 or 87.
Yeah,
maybe.
Something like that. I'm not sure. I'm not positive.
I'm kind of thinking 86.
Yeah.
And maybe it was late 85. But when, so the first meeting date is October
53. Mm-hmm.
Kind of the consensus.
Yes.
And there wasn't a regular established meeting, like the mother group was the first established meeting that kept going.
Yes.
And that was actually established in 59 or 60. They have the timeline on the
Oh, I'm not sure.
On the convention.
Right.
They had a timeline.
I can't remember.
And it was 59, 60,
right.
61.
But Jimmy kept going even when nobody showed up, and he kept it alive.
Right.
And I don't know if anybody knows this little fact that just popped, you know how things just pop into your pops, is that for a while the World Service Office, the regional office, and the area office were all in the trunk of Bob Barrett's car. If you wanted to buy literature for your meeting, you called up Bob and asked him what meeting he was going to, and then he bought it out of the back of his car, and he had letters and all kinds of stuff from everything in the back of his car.
That's wonderful. When Jimmy first started or decided that there needed to be a different fellowship, Is it because he was shunned, or is it because he couldn't relate?
When two things happened in 1953, almost simultaneously, Jimmy and a bunch of people from Alcoholics Anonymous out in his area sat around and talked about how addicts didn't make it in, had a hard time making it in AA.
Mm-hmm.
And NA was now broke about. At the same time in the South Bay area, there was a guy named Chuck Dietrich, and he was sitting around talking with a bunch of people about how addicts didn't make it in NA, and the outgrowth of that was Synanon.
Hmm.
Yeah, I remember hearing about Synanon in that time.
Yes, it was exactly the same year, exactly the same year, mm-hmm. and it came out of exactly the same observations. And for a while, they had AA for addicts. They had Jimmy formed, and it was Jimmy and about 10 other people in Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe a few more. I saw the original, the office had in the archives in Sun Valley had the original, and I saw that. Yeah.
Made a schedule for that.
Yeah, and all the thing that they formed it in the business meeting and all the names of the people that signed it and stuff. And then the trustees of AA decided that that was a violation of the traditions, and they gave them the boot, and that NA came out of that.
And so what is Synanon?
Synanon?
Well, it's nothing to do with 12 steps.
No. It was an abusive treatment program. They screamed at you, yelled at you. It was incredibly abusive.
So it hasn't lasted?
No. It
did go on for a long time.
Yeah, a lot of people in Narcotics Anonymous, Bob Raymar, who was WFD chair during all that crap time, he came out of Synanon. A whole lot of people came out of Synanon. I mean, they did okay as long as they stayed in Synanon. When they got out, when they left Synanon, then they started to pick up.
Yeah, it could be long term.
It was forever. You lived there forever.
I yelled at them.
No, then if you live there long enough, you got to yell at. Exactly. Anyway,
actually, I was reading last night. I got sent an email, and it was, "We do recover." But it was early edition, and most of it sounded very familiar to me, but I realized some of it had been edited out. And, of course, in When You Recover, it talks about how, you know, why NA was started, because there were many trying to make it in AA
that could not
identify,
mm-hmm.
and were being lost.
Right.
I mean, that was, you know, basically what it said. Where we come from.
Well, you know, I know that back in those times, and I believe this is why we talk about the 12th edition in our meetings. Usually someone says what it means to them is that, you know, it used to be illegal. Is that true?
Oh,
for
yeah.
Addicts.
Yeah, there was a law that addicts couldn't, well, when they would parole you, or you were on parole, or you were on probation, you couldn't conjugate with other addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And when, that was how, when NA started, but after they had a bit of time, people started going to parole officers. I went to the probation department, and after I had been clean for a little while and was going to meeting, they explained to my probation officer why I was associating with other addicts and what I hoped to have come out of that. And she said, okay. And then later on, she brought me in, when I had about a year, she brought me in and had me do an in-service on the NA to the other probation officer.
Well, that gives me chills, because, you know, y'all broke the the attitude of the general public,
yeah.
toward us. You know, you were really, you did that. Started.
There was an early non-addict trustee who was on the board of trustees, and I can't remember his name, but he was a judge in Whittier. And just, there's a pile of people that got sentenced to NA rather than the joint, or rather than from this guy. I mean, there's probably, it's at least 100 people that got clean because of Judge, I can't remember his name. He wasn't active by the time I just thought of something. Trophy terms used to be forever. You know, I'm serious. Did you know that?
No.
No, yeah, you were elected to the Board of Trustees. You were
there forever.
Yeah, it was. I'm serious. And then in, gosh, I think it was 81, there was, maybe it was, I think, I'm not sure. It was 81, I think. There was a lot of bad blood between the office and the trustees. Because there were just some things happening that were just not ethical. No, they were just like, okay, people would write to the trustees and care of the office, and the office, because that's the only address they had, and the office would send it back as undeliverable.
Oh.
I mean, stuff like that.
Little personality problems.
Yeah.
There you go.
There was a big problem. And then there were some areas who would write for their literature. And I started volunteering a little bit at the office. I would go out and help pack. And when I went out there to help, you know, mail out stuff, well, they had a huge pile that were backlogged because Jenny couldn't handle it all, and which is understandable, and they couldn't get enough volunteers to handle it all, so they had this huge pile, and the first thing I did was take the pile and sort it out according to the longest, and some of it went back like 6 months.
Mm.
So instead of throwing it out, I rearranged it so that the oldest was on top, and then I started filling the orders from the top. Well, I would come back the next week, and the same things would be on the bottom again. And what I started noticing is there's certain areas, regions, that always ended up on the bottom. So I think there was some kind of conflict between, I don't know what the conflict was between the region and the office, or I don't even know if it was Jimmy, because there were a lot of other people that volunteered. It could have been somebody else that did that, but the trustees started putting pressure on the office to clean up their act a little bit. And then the office
start
got
mad. Being more business-like?
Yeah, and the office got mad at the trustees. And so at that particular conference, I think it was 81. Anyway, that conference, the office, it was so bad that the office and the Board of Trustees, the office and Bob Stone and the WSB chair met and worked out a compromise. And the compromise was that there would be two trustees on the WSO board. The WSO board members would start attending the trustee meetings, two of them, and that the trustees would be elected to 5-year terms. So that's where the lifetime. And we got, when I got a list, when I was elected to the trustees, I got a list of trustees. And there were people I'd never seen.
Mm-hmm.
But Chuck said, well, maybe they'll be active again sometime. So everything was pretty loose and sloppy. And then part of the tightening up is, the office really needed somebody who could take us a step further. And some of it was money. We just didn't have enough money. Jimmy didn't have enough money, but some of it was just management stuff that he was an addict, he was a painter.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, I wouldn't be good in that position.
Well, and plus it kept growing, and he was getting older.
Yes.
We all get older each
right.
day. And I know after the book got published, then it really boomed.
Oh.
But it was growing exponentially then.
Yeah.
And then it went off
mushrooms,
the charts.
Yeah.
When I came in 84, I know my first 5 years in recovery, I mean, there was just, you know, new meetings, growing. We got our region, we got areas. Everything was just rolling.
Right.
It's like, are we done?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
we are. Thank you very much,
you're
Sally.
Welcome.
Cupcake.
I love them.
I
don't
know
for over a
does anybody know how to work this?
I think they'll come back and do it.
Okay,
yeah.
So we just leave it.
I wouldn't touch anything.
You sure probably shouldn't touch anything.
I won't touch anything.
I mean,
I'm sure he'll be.
I'm a big toucher, but.
I do see a stop button. I'm going to hit stop.